And welcome to the Lindley Evans Music Studio at the ABC in Ultimo for another edition of Thank God It's Friday. I'm Richard Glover, and this week, from the cast of South Pacific, Lisa McCune and Teddy Tahu Rhodes. It'll be an enchanted evening tonight. And our panel, Gene Kitson, Subby Valentine and Anthony Aykroyd. But as always, here is the news from nowhere. I see that Australian doctors are studying what they call onomania, or the compulsive need to shop. I just wish they'd spare a thought for people like me who suffer from shopping reluctance, or to use the technical name, tightwad mania. All around me, I see my fellow citizens joyfully shopping, their gold Visa cards flashing festively in the sunlight, their shopping baskets full. Oh, that I could join them. Instead, I sit at home, fumbling for my wallet, only to find that my pockets are deep and my arms are short. Everywhere I see barriers to my enjoyment of the shopping experience. Since when did a shirt cost $85 and a pair of Dacks $150? I feel as if I might faint, were it not for the excessive price of smelling salts. Then there are the mirrors. They are everywhere. In a particularly cruel move, they've even put them into the changing rooms. How am I meant to convince myself to buy an $85 shirt when right before me is evidence of how appalling I look in it? Couldn't they borrow the mirror from Luna Park, the one that makes you tall and blessedly thin? But most of all, it's the excessive choice. How am I meant to know what style collar I want, or which of the 13 different kinds of jeans? How am I meant to know which of the 37 brands of ground coffee I should buy, or how many pixels I want in a digital camera? Shopping, already a complex activity, is getting worse with each passing week. In the supermarket down the road, they've added new specialty sections. Where's the olive oil? Well, it could be in the Italian section, in the health section, in the gourmet section, or in cooking needs. It's probably in all four, since the idea is not to assist the shopper, but to make you browse. By constantly shifting everything around, you're forced to walk through every aisle about 20 times, searching, looking, yearning, and they hope buying other stuff. There is now good evidence, I believe, that Coles and Woolworths are basing their store design on the labyrinth of the Minotaur from ancient Crete. Vainly do we sacrifice seven youths and seven virgins to management, yet they refuse to change the layout. And so every day you see shoppers unravelling balls of string just so they can find their way back from dried soup to canned fruit. No wonder they now open 24 hours. That's how long it takes to locate the cheese spread snackabouts. Oh, you don't like cheese spread snackabouts. Maybe it's just me. I've long fantasised about a bloke's shopping mall, which would offer good parking, cheap prices and really minimal choice. The supermarket would offer only three products: lamb chops, beer and toilet paper. They'd have a whole aisle each. No more trailing up and down the aisles like lost souls from Dante's Inferno, constantly bumping into the same lady, the one who insists on parking a trolley mid-aisle while she endlessly debates the choice between the freeze-dried carbonara and the freeze-dried puttanesca. Doesn't she realise it's the same mucky, salty goo in both packets? In the bloke's supermarket, all that hassle gone. Into the trolley they'd go, lamb chops, beer, loo roll, and you'd be trundling on your way. The specialty vegetable shop would then beckon, "Vegetables, sir." The kindly assistant would holler from his shop doorway, and upon one's nod, a head of broccoli, his only product, would be tossed into your cart. The practiced shopper wouldn't even slow his trolley, simply signalling his thanks with a few accurately thrown coins. At the bakery, there'd be a new product called the mixed loaf, a loaf of which one end would be white bread. Stay with me. And the other wholemeal, with a kind of light rye in the middle. Adults could start eating at one end, the kids at the other, and everybody would be happy. I don't want to blow my own trumpet, ladies and gentlemen, but it would be the best invention since... With all this new efficiency, the shops would be able to drastically lower their prices, at last providing some relief to those members of the citizenry suffering from tightwad mania. With a little help and sympathy, one day our arms may even grow long enough to reach our wallets, which in my case would be a bloody miracle. And that's the news from nowhere. We had the free-spending Gene Kitson, the non-tight-wadded Subby Valentine, and billionaire Anthony Aykroyd, welcome. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming.
Oh, well, you're very welcome.
You know, I'm along the same lines as you, Richard, when it comes to being tightwad. We cut from the same cloth.
We are. Yeah. A very cheap cloth. It's nylon.
Second hand.
Can I say, Richard, since you've been videoing the News from Nowhere, there's a lot of pressure on us to look interested.
Does up the ante, doesn't it? You've always been good with the acting ability, Anthony. It should be fine.
Yeah, but I did find myself smiling a lot through your monologue.
Only when the camera was on you, I noticed. Yeah,
exactly. Laughing, chuckling.
Now, let's make sure you've kept up with this week's news. Which Australian politician was like a bull in a china shop?
Bull in a china shop.
Well, any this takers? Would be Tony Abbott.
Got to be the rabbit.
Tony Abbott, who went to Beijing and told the Chinese leaders that the country would be better off if it embraced democracy and legal freedoms and things. And
I think more like Australia was the
answer. Yeah. Well, and you know, I think this mild brouhaha has come about because the Chinese are assumed to be so sensitive. I mean, we're not even allowed. No one is allowed to say to them, "Please stop stealing our secrets," or "Please stop hacking into every site in the country,"
or "Please stop tormenting the Tibetans, for instance.
That's right. Or "Please stop putting our backbenches on the Chinese bankroll," or "Or why do you need so many nuclear submarines?"
Allegedly.
Or "Why not give democracy a go?"
Come on, not all the backbenches are on the payroll.
We're not even allowed to ask why we are sending aid to a country that has a moon landing program. Does that make sense to you?
I think we just give them a bit of... Everyone just freaks out about the Chinese thing. I think it's a bit racist. I reckon just everyone... If you were saying about the Americans, and I don't want to bat an eyelid, but it's everyone freaks out a bit about...
I think America would be improved by democracy. They could have an election without a hanging Chad.
They'll never try it, so we'll never know.
But I mean, I've got to say, though, that the Chinese took it very well. Did you read Hu Jintao's reply to Tony Abbott?
No.
Thanks for setting us straight, Tony. I've given the order to dismantle the entire structure of the Communist Party. We're going to become Catholic, wear Speedos and buy up Australia through privately owned companies. Please drop in for dumplings any time. Yours capitalistically, Jin Jin.
So good it worked.
Worked a treat.
It worked.
Haven't things changed, though? Just a couple of years ago, we had a Prime Minister who could speak Mandarin, and now we've got a would-be Prime Minister who can barely speak English. It's a... What a change.
But he can eat a Mandarin, which is, a triumph. Which Labor identity is in trouble for involving his family in his work this week?
Oh, wait a minute. I know what this is. Yeah. And I am angry about this, ladies and gentlemen. This is about Michael Williamson, the former national president of the Labor Party, head of the HSU. I'm pretty angry about this situation with Michael Williamson. I mean, a hard-working union official wants to spend some quality time with his family.
Exactly.
And he's criticised for being a greedy, conniving, low-life, devoid of moral scruples. He just wanted to share the love with his family.
It is amazing, isn't it? Because he got his son and he got his wife and he employed them.
You can't put a price on family time. Michael says 5 million will do it.
But is he the first person in politics to resign to spend less time with his family?
but the thing is, it's the health services union. I mean, how healthy must his family be? I mean, no expense spared for those people. I don't know. He's keeping them all healthy. I don't know what the problem is.
Have you done archiving? It really builds up your aerobic capacity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He won't be spending less time with his family. He'll be doing more time with his family. I think Mrs. Williamson was the one who was up front because she's on the union payroll, as we found out, like the whole family is. Mm-hmm. And she said she should have been paid more because her work was downright disgustingly filthy. That's what she said. And she wasn't emptying bedpans or anything. Her downright disgustingly filthy was what she was doing was filing Craig Thompson's expenses.
In the world of art, finally, who seems to have come up smiling after all these years? In the world of art.
Smiling.
Who's come up smiling?
Oh, no, Lisa, what's the story? Smiling. They found... It sounds like they found the skeleton of Lisa.
They found the skeleton of a person they think might be the model for the Mona Lisa.
Right. And find out why she was... They found the actual body of the person, why she... And they've also found next to it a fossilised... It's the world's oldest vibrator. So it's clear why she was smiling, apparently. That's It's controversial, but that's what they're saying. That's what they're saying. Don't shoot the messenger. I saw it on the internet. It must be true.
I think you're a little bit naive. That's not a smile from a vibrator. That's a smile. I have another version. I think she's either got a pierced tongue or she's perhaps, hiding her teeth, which, because bad teeth were very popular in those days.
You think she's embarrassed about her teeth?
I think she might be. Or she might be, she was a mum and she's had to pick up one kid from the ballet and the other kid from the footy or tapestry or jousting or whatever it was there. And then she's had to call a mum. Then she's had to throw the boar on the spit, before the old man gets home. And she is stuck with some bloody pavement artist trying to get the hills right over her left shoulder. And if you look closely, I think her smile is polite and doesn't want to be rude, but the eyes are saying, will you just get on with it?
Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday with Richard Glover.
We have Gene Kitson, Sonny Valentine, Anthony Aguirre, and a wonderful audience. Thank you for coming. Now, the Olympic opening ceremony is on tomorrow morning, 5:30 or 6 Australian time, signalling 2 weeks of overexcited sportscasters, headlines, scandals and clichés. On past form, what's your prediction for the news headlines of the next 2 weeks? Anthony Aquid.
Oh, Richard, you know what it's going to be here in Australia. Australia wins this and Australia almost won that and we should have won something else and, I'm sick of it. I'm a bit of a contrarian on this, ladies and gentlemen. I don't want to be branded as unpatriotic, but let me give you the truth about this event, ladies and gentlemen. It's just our tax money paying for a bunch of overindulged, oversexed, endorsement-hungry egomaniacs to have a holiday shag fest in the Olympic Village and then compete in events with objectives that any of us could achieve.
As it is, ladies and gentlemen, on TGIF. You won't hear this anywhere else.
Edgy, very edgy, Anthony.
Let me prove my thesis. Okay. Any of us could do what these guys are doing. Let's take the pole vault, Steve Hooker, big stick, runs up with a big stick, tries to reach a tall bar. Hey, Steve, one word for you. Ladder. Don't need the big stick, climb up the ladder, Steve. And ordinary men like myself, who are just modest sportsmen, every day I climb Mount Gibraltar and Barrow, ladies and gentlemen, 3,000 feet. 3,000 feet. And I'm leading a Chinese crested powder puff and a Labrador up there. You don't see Sally Pearson doing anything like that, do you? Plus, the Chinese crested powder puff has a crap on the way. And I've got to pretend that I just keep walking because I haven't got a plastic bag. It adds a lot of pressure. So that's my opinion.
That's worth gold. That's got to be worth gold.
Gold. What are the cliches we'll hear? Sonny Valentine.
I just wanted to get started because they're trying to fill up their papers with stuff where nothing's happening. Every day you go, oh, what's happened now? Usain Bolt, he's got a sore leg. Half a page. The guy's got a sore leg. One of the rowers I saw was hurt because of a comment someone made about his shirt. That was another quarter of a page. It's just going on and on. So just get this thing happening. Look, it started already, Richard, today. Chinese drug cheats. That's out there already. That's just going to be standard. When they win, they're cheating. Australians.
Actually, Tony Abbott said that's all right.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Straight away. So that's going to be the favourite one. Australian beaten by a drug cheat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if someone Australian gets busted, his mum. It was his mum. The Australians, we're all sound.
Or he's really a Kiwi.
It wasn't his fault. Right. He didn't know what he was doing. Chinese filthy people, it's ridiculous. They just hammer them, just keep going mad. And also, because the Chinese, let's face it, they always go, on the drugs. There's how many, billion? Mm-hmm. Some of them are going to look a bit weird. That's a lot of people. It's not surprising that some of them are going to look a bit unusual. So just ease up on it.
Gene Kitson, what are the cliches we'll hear?
Well, I agree with Anthony. I think Australia will tank in some events that we expected to win in, of course, and then we'll score an unexpected and thrilling gold in some event we didn't even know Australia was in. horses or canoes or skateboards.
Which will suddenly become the most important sport.
That's right. Or the Canadians, that event where they push little...
Shuffling.
They push little pie makers around with brooms, that event. And then there'll also be square little men from countries we don't know about, like Snatchistan and Jerkistan. And they will throw big dumbbells on the floor until one man picks one of them up and hurts himself. And then Nick Darcy will squirrel grip an American and headbutt the Frenchman and get gold, silver and bronze and 6 months without parole. And the Chinese... The Chinese women, we've had a bit of talk about the China. Chinese women swimmers will have to shave their beards between laps. James Magnussen will be told there are 100,000 Olympic condoms and he'll ask, what are the rest of you having? The whole British transport system will go on strike and everyone will be carried over the Thames in hundreds of brave little fishing boats. In the true Dunkirk spirit. And that's a spirit where it's a cock up and everyone gets wet the way the British like it. And this will be the first games where no one defects because of they've all had 3 weeks of British food.
Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday with Richard Glover.
Gene Kitson, Subby Valentine and Mouthy, Anthony Ackroyd are here, and it's a time for the Wheel of Death. Here are the topics suggested by our wonderful participants here in the theatre. They've put, 14 topics, I think, on the board. I'm going to spin it. Yes. Whichever topic comes up, Mr. Subby Valentine has to speak, hopefully entertaining us for 3 minutes.
Yeah, good
on
luck with that.
This topic, as suggested by our visitors, round and round and round it goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. The topic for Subby is shoulder charging. Who suggested shoulder charging? Thanks for nothing.
Get out.
You do get a copy of Exhumed Alive from Rudy.
Get out right now.
Actually, maybe you could shoulder charge him.
Just take your time, Subby.
Yeah. Are we away?
Yeah.
The topic from my learned friend, shoulder charging. Look, there are a number of ways of taking this. Obviously, you could charge money for shoulders. That's like there is a black market for limbs on the open market, and shoulder charging is a terrible thing. If you need a new shoulder, it should be free, as far as I'm concerned. Should be under Medicare. And first of all, so shoulder charging needs to be stamped out once and for all. Knee charging, sure. I mean, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in knees, but shoulders, get out of there. The other aspect of shoulder charging, of course, I assume you're referring to rugby league. Probably a lot of people in this room aren't familiar with rugby league. This is it. Older ABC crowd. What you'd... Thank you and good night. Thank you. You've been a wonderful crowd. I include myself, by the way. Rugby league's a game, ladies and gentlemen, where people about the size of Teddy, you saw Teddy before, Men Mountain, they get together. There's a small bit of pigskin, not that important, and these very large men run at each other until they hurt. That's pretty much what goes on in a game of rugby league. Quite stupid, as it turns out, and a lot of brain damage. But anyway, within that game, because what's happening is they tackle each other very brutally and try and hurt each other over and over and over again. And what they found as time's gone on over the years, that people aren't getting hurt quite as badly as they'd hoped. You know, only 2 to 10 mild concussions per game. So someone had a great idea, a thing called shoulder charging. And that's what happens. There's a guy who's stopped for some other reason. Maybe he's been tackled by somebody. He's just, I don't know, trying to remember something from his youth. He's a bit stupid. And then another very large man lines him up, runs at him about 4 million miles an hour, launches himself with his shoulder at that man's head. He falls over. He's unconscious. That's your shoulder charging, ladies and gentlemen. It's the pinnacle of the sport. It's a beautiful thing. If you haven't seen it, forget the Olympics. Your synchronized swimming, any of your ballet, your gymnastics. What do you want to see is a massive guy smacking another guy's head with his shoulder. If you get a chance, have a look at it. I'm all for it, personally. I can't get enough of it. It's the only reason I watch rugby league. I know, as I said, we've established we don't watch it as a group. Let's get on board. Let's get on board. We'll all get together. After this, we'll go back to Richard's place. And I know he records all the shoulder charges. He's got a compilation tape. He does it on video. So we're all familiar with the format, which is great. We'll all get there. We'll all go there and we'll watch shoulder charges all night. Thank you very much.
Subby Valentine. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the ancient Roman Colosseum. The thumbs are down. Are they down? Are they medium? Or are they up? They are up! He survives another week on the Wheel of Death. Now, research just out shows that 80% of kids now have the ability to do a multimedia project, which these days means some sort of audio, visual, computery thing. Not in my day, ladies and gentlemen. In my day, a multimedia project meant sticking a bit of wool onto a piece of cardboard with a text around it explaining the history of the wool industry. Multimedia meant pipe cleaners and cotton wool and clag glue and didn't have a glorious smell. So what was your multimedia school project and just how fabulous was it? Anthony Aykroyd.
I'm with you, Richard. Those were the days, eh? Those were the days. Who remembers 1969? Well, as Subby's established, you probably remember 1929. But anyway... the hell am I alienating the audience?
Can I point out that most people at least have their own hair?
In fact, I would say everyone in this room has more hair than... Yeah. Everyone.
What about that bloke over there? Yeah. Stand up, sir. Stand up. You know who I'm pointing at. Come.
Including
he's tried to compensate with a beard, listeners, but...
No, that's a member of the Chinese women's swim team.
That was the Mona Lisa skeleton. But anyway, now, rice bubbles, ladies and gentlemen, back in 69. On the back, you could cut out little cardboard replicas of the Apollo 11 moon landing. They weren't even plastic toys. You had to cut things out off the back. Mm-hmm. And so that was my school project, and I painstakingly constructed... a very attractive and, I think, moving diorama of the moon's surface, background of stars, if you can imagine that, and planets, strung up the Saturn V rocket, the Command Module Columbia, Lunar Module Eagle, dangled from threads of cotton. Beautiful. Are you with me? Have you got a visual picture? Yeah. And I had Neil Armstrong stuck there with glue like that, and Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins was out here somewhere. No one ever remembers him. But that must piss him off, really. I've come all this way, can't I just go on the moon? No, stay, just circle it. I left, you know, hours of painstaking, minutiae, building the diorama, left it overnight, and that's when the cat struck. Because Tapus, which was the name of our cat, we were the first people in Tasmania to think of it. Of course, that's a good one. Came down and Neil Armstrong was decapitated. Buzz Aldrin was a mess. Planets were ripped apart. And the Sea of Tranquility was a swamp of cat piss. Sorry, I get emotional thinking. I've never been able to look at the moon again, ladies and gentlemen. Or a cat. So that's my experience with the diorama, the multimedia project.
That is a multimedia project. Now, yeah. Subby, do you remember yours?
Yeah, man, this is all too high tech for me. I don't remember any of this stuff. Mine was very much monomedia. I remember going a project that I had at high school. I went to an agricultural school. And so I had a very exciting project on grasses and legumes.
Wow.
That was a project. It had to be a big one. It was like over months. Yeah, how much? What have you got? So that basically consisted of collecting grasses and legumes and squashing them in a book. Not as easy as it sounds, though, because you had certain ones you had to get. There were holy grails in the grasses and legumes world. I spent hours at Casula train station with a couple of buddies searching for crimson clover. And you'd be scouring and say, oh, it's over here, and you'd go running over and you'd go, it's strawberry clover, you idiot. And you'd keep looking. We'd know it's crimson clover. It's like the Lord of the Rings. You couldn't find it. It's this thing that you couldn't find. So, but eventually, and also you had legumes. Those botanically minded people know that the most common legume is a pea. And it's very hard to squash a pea into a book. It just makes a mess. So you had your snow peas.
Anthony's cat could have managed it.
Well, that's pretty much my school project. You get them all, you squash it all down, you get a book that's about, you know, half a metre thick, and then by the time I hand it in, I'm pretty much handing in a compost heap.
Hey, you're still an expert on grasses. I mean, as you wander around the place, you still say, oh, well, that's a strawberry clover.
He was passing something around before the show.
I'm an expert.
I reckon that was silver clover.
Better have some more.
Jean, do you remember your multimedia projects?
Oh, well, Subby's just reminded me how one project we all had to do, of course, was to get a seed of some sort and germinate it on a bit of wet cotton wool on the windowsill. Remember, that was absolutely, actually, probably one of the most exciting things that ever happened to me at school. Well, and it didn't even happen at school, you see. It happened at home. But, you know, I think because it was very competitive too, you used to compete with this to how high your shoot could go, your pea shoot could go. Anyway.
That's a whole different game.
Yeah. That's a whole,
Boys play that one.
You compete how high the pea could go,
In fact, Subby and I were doing that before the show as well. After the Crimson Clover.
I do think that Subby just made up the word strawberry clover.
No, it's a thing. It's an actual thing.
I don't believe it.
Look it up.
Really? I'll look it up. Quick. And in fact,
Google it.
The question, you know, you were talking about the kids doing multimedia. I just want to go back to that for a sec because my 14-year-old made a 5-minute movie of the life of Marie Antoinette with film clips, graphics, voiceover, provocative subtitles, editing she had, and CGI effects, and a movie score and credits on her laptop while she was waiting in the dressing room till I did my gig. And at her age, and that is true, it was absolutely phenomenal. And she did it all just, you know.
But it's not a proper project. There's no clag glue involved.
Well, we had to make our own clag. We had to make our own clag glue. And
make
we were
own
just
clag.
Still.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing
first,
we did.
First, get a horse.
No. Oh, yeah. No, let me reassure you, our clag was flour and water and salt. That's all it was, remember? Yeah. And then it would start moulding after a few days. And then it would stink. And then your whole book. Yeah. But we were. What the main thing we did was cut photos out of National Geographic.
Oh, yeah.
But
saucy.
I have to say, I was.
I used to do that as well.
Yeah. I've still got National. I've got boxes of National Geographic at home in case the kids ever needed them. Oh, can you believe it? But they go way back now. 1929 was the first one, I think. Yeah. I was talking. I have to tell this story. Sorry, guys. So that last night I was talking to some huge fans of yours, Richard. Now you may
very
not
intelligent
know
people. Yeah,
holes in the story already.
You may not know that 9 out of 10 Catholic principals from the Parramatta diocese are huge fans of yours.
What's wrong with the 10?
Yeah, I don't know.
A man of impeccable
maybe
taste.
It was 10 out of 10.
He hates you.
And I was telling them a story about being at primary school and having this teacher, Mr. Robertson, who is, you know, we loved Mr. Robertson. He was very young and he was groovy and you know, it was when our hormones first sat up and yodeled and he seemed to be going through pubescence along with us and he knew all the words to the Beatles and we adored him and we made him, this was probably the biggest project ever, we made him blue fluffy cushions for the back of his FJ holder. We did, and they were perfect. And then when the school inspectors, remember school inspectors, when the school inspectors came, we made up a song about Mr. Robertson and how much we loved Mr. Robertson, and we wore little white skivvies and tartan skirts, and the school inspector gave him great commendations for the, you know, the creativity he inspired. Today he would probably be arrested.
Was it, here's to you, Mr. Robertson? Was it?
True story.
Yeah. We have Jean Kitson, Subby Valentine, Anthony Aykroyd, and our wonderful audience. TGIF on ABC Local Radio. Now, we've just had the carbon tax. We've only just got over that, and already there's talk of a new tax, a fat tax. Carbohydrate tax. It's a carbo tax, actually, I think.
Oh.
With
that's good.
That's not bad.
No, it's good.
Proponents say that the only way to tackle obesity is to make junk food more expensive and good food cheaper. What do you think of the idea, and do you have any better notions of how to stop the obesity boom? Let's go to the thinnest member of our panel, Subby Valentine.
Thinnest person in the room, I'd imagine. I am. Who's going to challenge me? Come on, stand up.
Come on, he's got a body like a bag of...
Oh, here's a young girl over here. Yeah. No, you lose, Subby. Yeah.
We'll get on the scales later. I think that, first of all, I think it's a bad idea because, I mean, if you're obese, you've obviously got a problem. Mm-hmm. I don't think you know, making you poor is going to help. Because they're still going to buy the food. So you just go, yeah, your life's a bit tough. Let's make you have no money. That's make it he's better. That's great. But as the skinniest person in the room, look, I've got...
as the second skinniest person.
I've got, yeah, in the top two. I've got some...
he's not admitting defeat, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not eating for a week now. We'll come back next week, okay? I think... look, a few tips for you. If you're a fatty, don't eat so much. I can't stress that enough. It's worked for me, and I think the problem is you're putting too much food in your mouth. That is my tip to you. Because you know what you need to do? I've worked out what it is. What you need to do is talk more. I'm skinny because I never shut up, all right? Because I talk rubbish constantly. Haven't got time to eat because I'm just talking crap. I'm doing it right now. You might have noticed. I've been doing it for the last half an hour. This is what I do all the time. It's not just when I come in here and people around me just go, just shut up, okay? So if you're a fatty, just become a little bit more annoying, like myself, and then you'll be fine.
Shut up.
Okay, there you go. So now I'm hungry. If I stop, I'm hungry. So yeah, I've got to keep talking.
How are you going to solve it? Anthony Aykroyd.
Richard, I'm glad you asked me this. Because I have the main cause of the increase in obesity over the decades, ladies and gentlemen, is this. The slow decline of the Nutbush City Limits Dance.
Oh. Bring it back, ladies and gentlemen.
That's how most people got their exercise during the 70s. They kick off with the...
Is that around anymore?
People would get up and they'd form...
Let's all do it. Come on. We all know the work. We all know it.
People would form a grid of human beings moving arms and legs in synchronized movements like they were zombies under the power of an evil puppeteer. And they got some exercise. I think it's fantastic. So bring back the Nutbush City Limits. Yeah. Also, the main exercise I got at uni in the late 70s was protest marches. Because there'd be something on every week. You know, oh, we're going to march. Well, don't even tell me. I'm there. As long as we're going, you know, da-da-da-da-da, you got out, you had a nice day, you had some crimson clover. It was a day out, you got some exercise. So bring back Nutbush City. Maybe Nutbush City Limits and a protest at the same time.
Yeah. Protest about Gene Kitson, with the fat tax, a good idea, a bad idea?
Bad idea. I have a better idea of how to stop the obesity boom, and that is stop hiring more public servants down at the Department of Health to sit on their asses eating pastries while they worry about the obesity crisis. This is even dumber than the Alcopops tax, which drove all the kids into drinking neat liquor. It did. If they make fast food more expensive, fast food fans will stop buying fresh food altogether. Duh! That's what will happen.
Is that a tongue twister? That was fantastic. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it probably was. Although it's very good. Yeah, my tongue's getting a workout today, I have to say. I have to say it's very good news for Domino's because pizzas have the lowest sugar in them. Also, a meat lover's or a Mexican is better for you than tofu.
What basis do you put this piece of absolute bunkum on the ABC?
No, it isn't bunkum. Tofu, well, too much. We're always... Too much tofu rots your kidneys. True. Look it up. Too much tofu rots your kidneys. Anyway, the three major causes of obesity, which have the most sugar in them, because we know it's always sugar, are Thai food, chocolate and white wine, which are the three... primary food groups in Canberra. Thai food, chocolate and white wine. The rest of us are actually fine. And if you're fussed about what other people eat, just take a look at Cabinet. Truly, I feel like I'm doing a bit of Cabinet bashing today, but I don't care. They'll remind you, actually Cabinet will remind you, of the people who are telling us about the obesity crisis. They will remind you of the old German joke that the government wanted everyone to be as blonde as Hitler and as tall as Goebbels and as thin as Goering. And actually, that's the only German joke, really, isn't it? They all went a bit quiet after that, which is what the audience has done, so I'll shut up. I might have gone too far. What was that tongue twister?
They love it
again?
If you tell a joke about their age.
Winners and losers. Winners and losers of the week. Who were they?
Looking at the Olympics, I think we should touch on the Olympics. The loser for me is poor old Sally Pearson. I know about Sally Pearson. Nice. Great hurdler.
Oh, yeah.
Big chance for a gold medal.
Sure.
World champion. But if you Google Australian hurdler. You don't get Sally Pearson, you get Michelle Jenicky. Has anyone seen the Michelle Jenicky footage?
Oh, that is hot, baby.
the woman's doing the moves over there.
Yeah.
Is this other hurdler who, when she warms up, she does a little sexy dance, and it's taken the internet by storm. It's like 48 million hits or something. I've only watched it 50 to 60 times. And purely for research purposes. Yeah. And so no one cares about Sally Pearson because the other girl dances better. So that's a bit sad. The winner, I don't mean to bring things down, but Christian Bale, because done the good thing after the terrible shooting, he went and visited.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he went to the hospital.
He's Batman, right? And he went there, which is lovely. Just, I can't help thinking, a lot of people thinking, you're about a week late, mate, to be honest. If you'd been here earlier, you would have helped out a lot more. So that's... So that's, you know. Yeah. But he's a winner. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
Good guy.
Hey, winners and losers. Anthony Eckery.
Yeah, thanks for that comedy tone. There, Subby. Now, the loser of the week, ladies, and did anyone see this? Picture of Barry O'Farrell locking lips with Jackie O. Did you see this? Pashing off Jackie. They're playing spin the bottle. Kyle and Jackie, he's in a clinch with Jackie, lips locking. I can't sleep at night, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Every time I go to kiss my wife, I see Barry's face and it turns me on. And it's just wrong. You know, if you moan Barry during lovemaking, it's a bad look. But also, I think I know the feeling you had before, Subby. Now, the winner, this is a bit obscure, but it was in the paper, healer and business owner Serge Benyon, something like that, who is being investigated for the Therapeutic Goods Administration investigating. He's a kind of one of these new age healers. And one of the services he offers is esoteric breast massage. What a fantastic line, don't you think, Subby? I've had, you know, come back to my place for coffee or, you know, which is like a shoulder massage, but never esoteric breast massage. That is fantastic. And, Gene, if I could see you after the show.
Yeah. Winners and losers, Gene Kitson.
Well, my...
And if I call you Barry, it's...
Yeah, that's right. Barry still hasn't got a beard, has he? What are you saying? I like the way... Earlier, Richard said he was going from the skinniest, and then I spoke last. So thanks for that. The winner is actually a kiss. For me, it's a kiss too. It's because Kylie Minogue got to kiss Elvis Presley's granddaughter. And if you're a pop singer, it doesn't get much better than that. And she got paid for it. And the loser is that poor man who hid $10,000 and he hid it in 15. The oven. 15 in the oven because he thought his wife never used it.
Please thank Gene Kitson, Subby Valentine and Anthony Aykroyd. Thanks for being part of TGIF. Our next studio show in a fortnight with Wendy Harmer, Tommy Dean and Lex Marinos. Until then, I'm Richard Glover. Thank God it's Friday. Yeah!